Mercer. Okay, thank you very much. The next speaker looks like Ryan Morris, if I'm not wrong. And then there's a Joe Morris, and then Terry Bengard.
Joe will be more interesting. And I'm sorry about my writing. In any case, I'm going to change the subject a little bit. I'd like to all of you come to a meeting. I know you'll love to go to meetings. April 15th in Watsonville. This will be a spring meeting of the Central Coast Rangeland Coalition, which is a group of scientists, ranchers, conservationists, who have begun their discussions in 2003, the primary goal of which is healthy rangelands in California. The jurisdiction or the terrain of the people really comes from Morro Bay to San Francisco Bay. So we're basically calling since the name of the Central Coast. It's going to be a very interesting meeting because we've come a long way. I'm one of the co-founders, as is my son and my wife. I'm a lawyer, and I came down to this area about 10 years ago. And all we heard about is how bad grazing and ranching is. And we started going to conferences as to what's this all about. And we found some people who thought that there was nothing better than grazing for the world. In between, we found some who would listen to both sides. And we thought that all these conferences were about the same, and we decided we're not going to go to these anymore. We're going to get the people who will listen to both sides. And that's what we've been doing for about 8 years. And you would think that, well, healthy rangelands, that's pretty easy. Everybody's going to be for that, motherhood and apple pie, and it won't take long. But we've learned so much. We've raised some money from NRCS and private funders, and we've been monitoring rangelands and some of the practices that have been going on. And we've learned a lot, and there will be more to learn as we go. There are also many monitoring changes that are going on with rangeland qualities. So what you have really is a massive undertaking here. It's who wants to see people getting poisoned from food and water? But on the other hand, what do we do about it? Some of the issues have already been mentioned. The idea of a little time is probably a good idea also because of the spring coming and all the preparations for market for most of the ranchers. So it's going to be a busy time. So that's well worth taking. But the whole notion that we're going to solve all these environmental sciences and what it's going to cost to do it and who are the people who are actually going to do it, the homeless person or the rancher or the cops. Okay, I got the picture. Very serious issues. I wish you would come. We have two meetings a year, and we need some people from the water community, the water regulating community. Even staff would be fine because we're trying to reach a common vision of what really works for the 21st century. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Morris. Perhaps Chris, someone can attend one of their meetings in the future?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the Rangeland Improvement Association, is that the same group, Mr. Morris?
No.
Okay, different group. Yes, we can consider that. Thank you. We are attending a meeting in April for the Rangeland Improvement Association, Central Coast Rangeland Improvement Association in San Luis Obispo area. But this is a different group, apparently.
Okay. Maybe I should have Francis explain why board members couldn't attend.
Up to four board members could attend without it being noticed as a board meeting. Because it's a TMDL, it's a quasi-legislative matter, so there isn't the ex parte concern, although if you were to attend, it would be appropriate if you end up not voting on this and comes back later that you disclose on the record your attendance.
Russ?
I'll go, Mr. Chair, if you want me to go. April 15th is not a very good day.
That's up to you. It's just an opportunity.
Yes, some contact information would be great, perhaps.
Joe Morris, and then
I'll talk.
And then Terry Bengard, and then Steve Shimmick. And the last speaker card is Jim Keller. But this is going to be more entertaining, right, than what preceded you?
If you believe my dad.
Okay.
Anyway, good afternoon, board members. The most exciting thing, my name is Joe Morris, and I represent San Benito Cattlemen Association, and am a member of the Central Coast Rangeland Coalition, and I am I'm not exactly happy to be here, but I'm glad to be able to talk to you. And the most exciting thing I've heard is that up to four members of the board can actually come to this thing, which will happen on a ranch. And these, you can see behind me, there's maybe four ranchers, maybe five. There are hundreds that are going to be affected by these kinds of rules. And they are your best bet for being successful. The process so far has failed to meet the tests that will bring success. And the reason is not because of any lack of effort. Obviously, staff has worked at least 300 pages worth of work over many years, but because there has not been a collegial process, and therefore there's no trust between you and the people who are going to be affected by the people and who are going to be affected by these this TMDL. I'm not afraid of mandatory versus voluntary issues. We're mandated to do all kinds of things. I'm mandated to walk between the crosswalk. Otherwise, I'm jaywalking, which is against the law. You've given me a numerical standard that isn't even met in some areas of wildlands without humans involved. And so the problem is that you said walk within the jaywalk, but you haven't painted the lines. I don't know where the 16 feet is that I'm supposed to walk in, and therefore there's a huge problem. And I'm worried that the confusion that this that is in this document will result in a very confused policy that will inevitably have unintended consequences on a rangeland that all of us depend upon for not only water quality, but water quantity. And the way to stop this this issue, and I'm being somewhat facetious, is to dam the water above where the public can access it. End of problem, right? Because there's no public access to it. But thinking seriously, if you think about what a dam does, it stops water. A friend of mine who's a very good rancher, he says what he does out there is he slows the flow of water to create beauty. That's what ranchers do. We create beauty and we create life. We create opportunities to use water, which is, in a sense, the creation of opportunities to live. For you, for the thousands of myriad animals that are out there, all of which eat and poop. And when they're doing those things, they're contributing nutrients to some place. The place, however, is not a point. This document reads as if it were produced by people who are good at point source problems. These aren't points. There's myriad points running all around there, making them essentially not a point. There's so many things to talk about. 3 minutes is woefully inadequate. This has not been a collegial process. I would say a college professor told me one time that some books should not be tossed aside lightly, and some should be thrown with great force. 90 days is not sufficient time to get this house in order. It should be not adopted. And we should start anew in a new process, a collegial process, with your best bet in the room, the ranchers, collegially at the table. We haven't been there yet, and I hope that we can do that. That way we can produce a sound policy that will produce success. And I think we're all about success. Thank you. See you on the 15th.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Terry Bengard?
I'm not a public speaker, so I'm going to warn you. I'm a little nervous here, but
that's okay. Take a deep breath.
Anyway, my husband and I are commercial cattle raisers east of Old Stage Road, and we have a relatively large block of land that we produce our cattle on. And the property has been in our family for over 100 years, and we've taken care of it the best we can. We do what we can to make sure that the water problems are solved. We use water troughs and water systems because we have no water in our section of Alisal Creek. It's diverted above us by our upstream neighbor and dumped below us, and we haven't had any water in that creek for years, except for last week when we had a big rainstorm. We had water for about 3 days, and now it's shut off again because he's diverting it around us, which is illegal. So, you know, I don't feel that our operation is causing any problems because, like I say, we have no water. But I just want you to know that I didn't find out about this document until about 3 days before the comment period was due, and I was shocked. I thought, how can a document that can be so damaging to the cattle industry just pop up and nobody knows about it? And I started calling people, fellow cattle ranchers, and I asked them, are you aware of what's going on here? And every one of them said, no, we haven't heard anything about it. And, you know, I know I'm beating a dead horse talking about the time issue, but to me it was really unfair. People were not prepared. And, you know, this is our livelihood, and this is our life. And I hope that you'll consider, you know, and not press the thing today, because I don't believe that it's a fair process. And I hope that you will consider giving us more time, because people need to understand what this is about. It's very important and could be very detrimental to the cattle industry. So thank you very much, and I guess I've said my piece.
Thank you for your comments, Mrs. Bengard. Steve Shemek, and last speaker is Jim Keller.
Good afternoon. Steve Shemek, Monterey Coast Keeper. First of all, I want to say that, I mean, I lived 20 years in Montana, most of the time on a ranch. I'm supportive of grazing, and I think that frankly, I think good grazing practices are protective of water quality. Look like, where's this guy coming from, Mr. Young? we would much prefer to see grazing over other more developed uses on our lands. So we don't want to see grazing go away. Many of the cattlemen, they should be thanked for the good work that they do. I would suggest to you that we all know, including probably the cattlemen here today, that there's probably some low-hanging fruit and some cattlemen that aren't doing their job. And that's what we need to work on. We don't need to make every single cattleman go away. That's not what we want. We do want to try and grab that low-hanging fruit and improve practices. That's all I'm going to say about cattle grazing. I would suggest to you that there may be some additional sources of coliform bacteria out there. I would suggest, this may sound far-fetched, but I would suggest that you look at, poor practices as far as composting, and that some of those composted materials may get put out on fields before they are properly cooked. And I would suggest to you that could be, in fact, a major source in the lower Salinas Valley. I would also suggest, as some of the cattlemen have said, that places like the Gallo Feedlot, I don't want to beat a dead horse, I did that last meeting, but Gallo Feedlot could be a major source of coliform bacteria. And I don't have time to go into it. Feel free to ask me if you'd like, but there are ways to reduce human sources of bacteria. There really are some ways to do that. So, look, I can't support the cattlemen's request for more time. This process has been going on for years, and I'm the person that always is in front of you saying, let's get on with it. And I can't change that. So I hope you will adopt the TMDL today. I do think that there's plenty of time to talk about implementation and talk about effective implementation of during the literally 13 years that this process will unfold after today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments. Last speaker is Jim Keller. If there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to address the board on this matter, if you please make sure that you submit a speaker card up front so we can hear your comments.
That was quick. See if I can get to any questions. I'm Jim Keller with the Big Sur Land Trust. I also work with the Central Coast Rangeland Coalition. I think you've all heard today the outcry from the ranching community here. There are maps in the staff report that provide evidence of how important rangelands are along the Central Coast. And I think that it's really imperative that this decision get delayed. As this program has been implemented and moved down the coast from the San Lorenzo towards this area, you're encountering more and more ranchers. Ranchlands, rangelands, actually, are really the filter of the water for the area. And we are deeply concerned with the pressures that this will apply on the ranching community and what may end up in ranchland conversion into other types of land use, which we really do not want to see. I asked Chris over here at the break earlier a few questions and didn't get answers. What I got was, those are good questions, which makes me assume that they don't have answers to them yet. Regarding the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, as that reads here, discharge containing fecal material from domestic animals to waters of the state that cause or contribute to exceedance of water quality objectives areas listed below are prohibited. What that means is any stream that is in excess of the standard indicated, if there's a rancher on that property, they're in violation because it's a contribution. And I just think that
if there's a discharge of waste that is contributing to an exceedance, it's not by default that just because they're next to a stream that they're in violation.
No, but without any other type of definition of how that has come to be understood, where the monitoring is, that can only be assumed. I mean, it's already been demonstrated that cattle do provide fecal coliform. That's a known point. So if you have cows within a watershed that is in exceedance of the standard, it's a contribution. I think that's undeniable. I think that this is just completely ambiguous to be able to say that's it. Mr. Hayashi brings up the same point with the homeless issue. There's not really a way of saying how to go about implementing this program. I think the objective is fantastic. I think that there's not enough program definition here. What Chris said is we've left it open-ended because we want to be able to work with these people to come up with a viable solution together. I will tell you that without the cooperation of the ranching community, given how much land this is, it's not going to be effective. It will not work. And I think at this point, as Aaron here and others in the room have pointed out, they don't feel like there has been adequate communication and cooperation in the program. So to say that we're leaving it open-ended so that we can work together, there hasn't been a clear demonstration of working together at this point. I think that postponing this for, at the very least, the recommended 90 days, where both sides can be able to come together and gain confidence that there is going to be some sort of cooperation, is a very good idea. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Any other board comments or questions after this last speaker? Mr. Hodgen?
Just wanted to comment that we do need to pass the TMDL. I think we're all concerned about water quality, and we want to improve it as best we can. And I'm sure everyone here can understand that it's very frequent that we hear people saying that there hasn't been adequate time. It's sort of a very common refrain. But with that said, I think that the perception of the cattlemen that something is, I don't know whether I'm quoting it properly or not, but being rammed down their throats, I'd like to mitigate that. And Mr. Briggs, if we decided that we wanted to give the cattlemen the 90 days that they asked for, I assume staff is going to need time on the end of that to respond. What kind of time would that add to the to a deadline we might set?
Well, yeah, there's a difference between having action in, say, 90 days versus actually having 90 days of additional process because of the lead time that we have for the board meeting. And that's part of what you heard in terms of, you know, only having 4 working days to review the latest document and that sort of thing. So I think what you're implying is that there'd have to be actually additional time tacked on at the if you truly want to provide additional 90 days of public process.
Right. I'm sure staff would want some time to respond to that additional input.
Right. So to truly provide 3 months of process time, you're probably looking at a minimum of 4.5, 5 months to come back before the board, if that's what the board wants to do. I would like to be able to answer some of the comments we've received, and typically the board gives the staff an opportunity to provide some response to what we've heard here before you make a motion and deliberate.
Sure. Okay. We do come back here in August, is it, or July?
July 8th.
July 10th?
8th. July 8th. We're back in Watsonville. And then December 9th. What's that? Mr. Briggs, did you want to comment on?
Yeah, actually, I'd like to give Chris and Pete a chance to provide whatever additional comments. Of course, they've been providing answers to a lot of questions as we've gone along here. But
can I just clarify that the staff is required to have responses to the written comments received up at least more than 15 days ago, and then required to have oral responses to anything after 15 days, so that it's new. They don't have to re-respond if they've already responded in writing, although they can certainly do that. But I just want to clarify that's the legal obligation is to be sure that you respond to anything new that you've heard since 15 days ago.
The staff, before they do their summation, Can you reiterate, if you haven't, whose ultimate responsibility of the requirements? The landowner? Because a lot of this land is leased. Is it the leasehold, or is it the ultimate responsibility of the landowner?
The responsibility lies with the owner and or operator. So, and I understand that's under the California Water Code, that's by statute the legal responsibility. So it would be either the land owner or the leasee, is my understanding. Or both. Oh, yes, correct, or both. In fact, my understanding is in the cases of property that is leased, it is indeed both, the owner and the operator.
Okay, Chris?
Okay, how about I'll start with a few things that I noted, and then since Pete and I haven't had time to really confer yet. So I'll start with some of Ms. Dinh's comments, and I appreciate her comments. Some of them were comments that we've heard, but then there was another comment that we've heard a couple of different times, and that's about this extra 90 days to consider. I guess one thing I would like to point out is that, like our last speaker just said, whether livestock are a source of bacteria in surface waters really isn't a question that's being posed here. So if we wait 90 days, at the end of that 90 days, we're going to be asking ourselves whether livestock are a source of bacteria, and the answer is still going to be yes. And part of the TMDL process is we identify sources, and that source is not going to change. And by the non-point source policy, we basically have a couple of different options, and one of the options we are posing as a regulatory mechanism for addressing that source, which is the prohibition, which this board approved about a year ago, which many of these people who are in this room today were here commenting on that prohibition. And even subsequent TMDLs, the Soquel TMDL after that, and the Aptos TMDL after that. Same prohibition, same language, same sources, same regulatory mechanism being proposed to address that source. So, again, after the 90 days, that source is still going to be here with us. And the options for how we're going to address that source from a regulatory standpoint is still going to be the non-point source policy, which we are obviously going to be using even 90 days from now. Ms. Mercer, I need to address this. Ms. Mercer mentioned that that the peer reviewer was actually one of the authors of the TMDL, and she's wrong about that. Let's just put it that way. I think the way it went down is we got scientific peer review back from, by the way, a professor from UC Davis, two professors from UC Davis. And then what Mr. Osmolovsky did is then to address the comments from the scientific peer reviewer, then he simply inserted information that the peer reviewer recommended that we include in the project report in the TMDL. So we included that information and then let the world know that it was a scientific peer reviewer who recommended that we include that information. So that is why we see the scientific peer reviewer's name in the TMDL document, because he recommended during the scientific peer review that we put it in there. If we had not put it in there, then, of course, the argument would be, well, you know, the scientific peer reviewer made a recommendation and you didn't follow his recommendation. Instead, we followed his recommendation and even cited the fact that we followed his recommendation. So that's why you see his name in the report. As far as parsing out, again, with respect to Ms. Mercer's comments, with respect to parsing out the difference between commercial and rural residential livestock owners, yes, they are obviously a different source owner, if you will. And what we've done is we have we've developed the language and the resolution that addresses this source category, which is from domestic animals. We have arranged it in such a way so that if the cattleman, for example, wanted to comply with requirements of the non-point source policy and show that they are meeting the prohibition, then they can do so in a collective manner. If they want to be part of, or if they don't want to be part of rural residential, that's their option. That's their option. And they are not responsible for demonstrating to us whether or not rural residential people who have animals are complying with the prohibition. Again, if they want to address their requirements as a cattleman, as a group, through a third party, they can do that. And the rural residential operators are not their problem. They're our problem. And I was taking a lot of notes, excuse me. I think that's most of what I caught that wasn't captured in the actual response to public comments written, unless, of course, the board has any further questions on these. And then after I'm done, I'd like to give Pete an opportunity to speak as well. Okay. Go ahead. Was there anything that you
could add? I concur with what Chris said, but also just I would like to emphasize that the state non-point source policy isn't going to change between now and 90 days from now, and the regulatory tools that we've identified it will not in any way substantially change. You know, more meetings with cattlemen sounds like a good idea. I think we actually have a slide that documents the entire sequence of meetings and phone conversations we have, if anyone's interested. But I concur with Chris that we always feel that communication is great and meetings are great, but you know, the non-point source policy, it is what it is, and I don't think that's going to substantially change in 90 days. So.
Yes, and there's one more thing that I did want to mention. As far as next steps go and how is this going to be implemented, The last speaker, I forget his name, but anyway, the last speaker, thank you, mentioned that he did ask me a couple of questions during the break, and I couldn't answer them. I guess I would like to say that I did answer them, but perhaps not in the way that he would like to have me answer them. And that is that how is this going to be implemented? And again, we purposely let it let the language be such that we have latitude so that as the TMDL is implemented in the years ahead, that we could work with people like the cattlemen and other organizations to develop a way that would be reasonable for everybody, that we could show and we could demonstrate that the TMDL was going to be progressively achieved over the period of time, which we're giving them 13 years, and that they could be a part of that dialogue, and that they could be a part of developing how that implementation would actually be drafted. We do know that many of these ranchers do have farm plans, and we think that the farm plans are a great place to start. That's a great place to start, and that's where, frankly, that's probably where we will start. Mr. Violini mentioned something to the effect of fencing and that this is where it's going. Pete Osmolowski, after the public comment period, we got a lot of public comments, and some of the public comments imply that there's a thought out there that what we're actually going to be requiring is fencing off of streams, and we're not going to be requiring fencing off of streams. What we're requiring is meeting current water quality objectives, and if they can do that without fencing off a stream, that would be great. We would actually like that, because then it's not going to be fencing off that riparian area from wildlife. So we support that idea. And the grazing document that they referred to, really what it is, or the value that I see in it, it is a compilation of management measures that these professionals are posing of how they can go about meeting water quality objectives. That's another great place to start. I think between that document and as they formulate that document and it becomes more detailed, they can take parts of that document and really infuse it into their ranch plans and use that combination as a start for showing compliance with this prohibition. And also, I want to mention that the prohibition that we are proposing, it is part of the non-point source policy that says that we can use prohibitions. And although people don't like the word prohibition because it probably conjures up certain images about what they can and cannot do, we prefer this option because it doesn't have any cancellation period. It doesn't expire. If we use a WDR or a waiver of WDR, and I wish I could look at you at the same time I'm talking in this microphone, but if we use a WDR or a waiver of WDR, with each one of these watersheds, as we go marching through the watersheds and do TMDLs with these watersheds, they're going to expire in 5 years. And that means that every 5 years for each one of these waivers or each one of these WDRs, you're going to be in front of the board, and people are going to be able to comment on what you are proposing as your implementation measure for achieving this TMDL. The prohibition does not have an expiration date. And that's really the nice thing about it, that we can develop a plan together that we think is reasonable, that will achieve the TMDL, and once we get that locked in, we can implement it and we can start monitoring without there being an expiration date, without coming to this board again every 5 years for each and every one of these watersheds that we do a TMDL in. So we think it's a good option, and we think it allows us the latitude and you the latitude to move forward into the future with implementing not only this but other TMDLs.
Isn't there a fee implication as well?
Thank you. Yes, and also with the WDR, of course, there's a fee. There's an annual fee. You also get out of jail free, so to speak, because there is no fee associated with complying with the prohibition in the mechanism that we are proposing. I also want to remind everybody
how much is the fee?
It depends. It depends. I don't know how much the fee would be. I think these fees are set by, are they not set by state board? I'm not sure about that, Francis.
Yeah, they're set by the state board annually. Yeah. And I think the cheapest fee is something like $700 a year, and then it goes up from there. It's based, for this kind, it's based on impacts to water quality and size of operation and things like that.
Right. So we tried to get this information out after we got the public comments, and we saw that some of the public comments sort of, raised our eyebrows, so to speak. And so we sent out a list of FAQs, frequently asked questions, to all the people who provided comment, and we wanted to let them know some of the things that I just said, and I'm sure that many of them got that FAQ document. Finally, regarding homeless, I wanted to kind of perhaps tie this off. During the Paro River Watershed TMDL, we had two prohibitions that were proposed. Both of them were approved by this board, and incidentally, neither of those prohibitions have made it to Office of Administrative Law yet. So by the way, what Francis said earlier in this particular resolution, what we're saying is that after adoption of this prohibition by Office of Administrative Law, then we have another 3 years when the clock even starts, when this TMDL even starts being implemented. We have a long time. The prohibition has not even been yet approved by the Office of Administrative Law, so it isn't even a prohibition yet. So the clock hasn't even started yet, not only in the Pajaro, but if this one is approved today, even on this one as well. In regards to homeless, finally, regards to the homeless, that was at the same time that we did the Pajaro that we also proposed and the prohibition was approved for human waste discharges. We have a requirement that with human waste, if it's untreated, it is simply not allowed, a zero. So we had to write a prohibition. We couldn't write a WDR. We couldn't write a waste discharge requirement giving people a certain amount of time to not load untreated human waste into a water body. So really the only option we had was if we see it, we have to do whatever we can to stop it. And at that time, we had a lot of public comment. One of them was from the city of Watsonville, the city that we're in, Mr. Robert Ketley, and his words were, I understand that from a legal standpoint, and it is a great, quote-unquote, goal. And that is the goal. The goal is to stop human discharges, the human waste discharges, into these water bodies, and we will do what we can to do that. Keeping in mind that prohibition yet is still not approved, it's not done yet, and finally, that the question of whether we could go out and just start enforcing municipalities on this prohibition, well, when Pete said something to the effect of that we would be cognizant of the problems about that, what he meant by that is that enforcement is a last resort. We use enforcement really and in a situation where we have something that's quite egregious, where we have perhaps a landowner or a municipality who knows that there's a problem, in this case human waste discharges, and they're doing nothing about it. And we've asked them numerous times to do something about it, and they still do nothing about it. Then we bring enforcement to the board. And remember that, of course, it's the board's decision for an ACL. So that process is going to be long. It's going to be stretched out. The prohibition isn't even on the books yet. And I just don't see it enforcement coming down on municipalities as a result of that prohibition. The prohibition was necessary. It's consistent with the law, and we're going to be cognizant of it insofar as we're going to give responsible parties every opportunity to abide by that prohibition. And I think I'm about done.
Okay. Mr. Briggs.
Yeah, thanks a lot for providing those responses for the board's consideration. I'll just add a couple of points of my own that hopefully won't be too redundant, but Mr. Violini, as he said, he hit hard on the fencing issue. One of the things I actually jotted down when you were speaking was about alternatives, and I think somebody subsequently mentioned one of those alternatives. I was thinking about an alternative that was used in the Morro Bay watershed down in San Luis Obispo County to deal with this very same issue, and that was simply alternative water supply, providing water away from the creeks, causes the cattle to not have to go down to the creeks to get water, and it turned out to be successful. That was an option of providing riparian corridor protection without doing fencing. Like I said, someone, I forget who, maybe it was in your PowerPoint presentation, Mr. Johnson, mentioned that as an option. Chris talked again about the homeless situation. Someone said, well, what can we do about it? It's a huge social problem that's made worse during bad economic times as we've been having recently. Of course, one thing is to have shelters so that people have a place to go even though they don't have a home. There's enforcement, and that's Mr. Hayashi was asking about basically what if I'm a property owner and have some of my property. And the homeless issue is a huge, it's a human tragedy, and water quality is really kind of a small part of that tragedy. It's a cultural and social tragedy, much bigger than the water quality issue. And similarly for a landowner, I mean, there are a lot bigger issues than water quality if people are camped on your property, just from a liability standpoint and lots of other issues. I don't suggest you bulldoze the creek because there might be other ramifications of that. But seriously, if someone has a constant problem with that and they have to make a choice what they're going to do about that. And in practical terms, what I would think what a landowner would do is call the local sheriff if you're in the unincorporated area. It wouldn't be the landowner who's responsible for enforcing something like that. And so it might be part of the solution. It just means that somebody has to go on to someplace else if there is not a shelter available that's provided by public agencies or nonprofits or whatever that might be in their community. Chris mentioned Robert Ketley's comments regarding Watsonville, where we are today from the previous TMDL. And if I remember right, I think Robert talked about trying to provide porta-potties, outhouses, as a way of improving sanitation, but said that there were a lot of problems with that, with maintenance, even use of the of those facilities, probably because of maintenance problems. So that's certainly not a solution to the problem. That there's also a funding issue there as far as someone like a municipality providing that kind of a system with its maintenance. As far as the issue of wildlife causing exceedances, we tried to address that and point out that we recognize that wildlife could cause the limit to be reached, could cause the limit to be exceeded. That doesn't excuse mean that any other controllable sources are excused or that there shouldn't be control measures. And just to give a extreme example, to get away from the grazing perception, if there were wildlife exceedances, does that mean that a failing septic system or a broken house lateral that's spewing raw sewage into the creek shouldn't be corrected? The answer is no, it does not mean that. And so by the same token, any of these other sources, you should do the best you can to try to make sure that's not contributing to the exceedances to the standards. The board has to consider, you know, as you said, Mr. Hodgson, it's not unusual for people to ask for more time for delay. I think you have to ask how reasonable those requests are, what the cost is, how legitimate the situation is. And I'm not saying that you folks are not being sincere, but we get lots of sincere requests for more time for things, and there is a cost associated with that in terms of staff time, board time to come back together again. I think we have to look at the cost, the benefit being maybe folks feeling a little bit better, like they have a better handle on it. But I don't think, as Chris pointed out, I don't think things are really going to change. The real meat of this matter is what are the plans to meet the numerics. The numerics are not going to change. So what are the plans? And you've talked about plans you have underway. It sounds to me like you're actually ahead of the curve because you have all these plans underway. And I don't think that is going to be helped by coming back after 90 more days of process. This is basically a clone, a repeat of an action the board has already taken elsewhere. It sounds like it's in an area that's already covered by your six-county coalition that you referred to. So you're already dealing with a TMDL that the board has already adopted within the same coalition area. But that's the kind of balance the board has to consider. I recommend that you proceed today.
Okay. Well, Mr. Hashi, I still have a problem with the homeless. You could call anybody you want to call to have them removed or whatever you want to do, but once, if the board changes or if the staff changes, it changes the whole flavor and the whole intent of what was put on paper when you leave it to the board or you leave it to the staff. So if our executive officer changes or this board changes and somebody comes before you and they decide to carry out and find this person for the discharge above and beyond, now he's faced with that, and it's out of his control because he cannot get those people off unless the right people get them off. And it's a sad time, but that's something we really have to consider.
How would that be changed by a change in the TMDL?
No, I'm saying we have to change the responsible party. I mean, you can't hold the landowner, you can't hold the operator responsible for something that he cannot control. So he may be in violation, but you cannot punish him and assess a fine to him if you cannot get those people out of there.
What about situations where someone allows homeless people on their property?
Well, that's if they allow them.
Right.
But if you do not allow them and you go to and you tell the sheriff to get them off, if you report them to the authority to have them removed, does that take you off?
Well, I would think that if a property owner is doing everything they can with a source that we all recognize as
I would
difficult
think
as that one.
That's the word, I would think.
Right.
But that's not in here. That doesn't say that in here. It says per the executive officer. So if you just have to put it in there, if A, B, and C, then he's not responsible.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hashi, isn't that's always the case when staff brings an enforcement action to the board? The board considers the merits of that case and decides.
That's true, but what if the board changes? The board today will feel that way. When this board changes, you could have a whole new makeup. Well, they will say, well, we didn't author that. That isn't what we thought. This is how it stands.
I think Francis wants to respond.
Well, I was just going to say that I understand your concern, but the bottom line is that owners are responsible for what goes on in their property for anything that could be their fault or not their fault. And the same thing with homeless people. But if it came to an enforcement action, just like Michael said, those things would be taken into account, what the actions were of the responsible party. But if someone came onto your property and chopped open a pipe and it flowed off, you would still be responsible. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, if it caused damage to somebody, you'd still be responsible. You might be able to go after the person who did it, but you'd still be responsible. I mean, that's, if a tree falls over and hurts somebody, you're responsible. I mean, that's just the way it is with landowners.
Hey,
and
you could go, that's already done. But I'm just saying, we have the chance right now to stop it at the bridge. We're going to stop it at the bridge.
Right, but the thing is that you cannot, just the same as you're saying, this board is the way it is now and you have the staff the way they are and next time it could be different. You cannot, as a current board member, bind later boards to some conditions that are not legal. I mean, it's not legal to say we're not going to hold landowner X responsible 10 years from now if that landowner allows homeless people and doesn't do anything about it.
That's not what I said.
You said you wanted to have conditions.
You're saying allows. I'm saying we don't allow.
Right, and I'm just saying that you can't say today, even if they do everything they can to not have the homeless people there and they're still there, you can't bind 10 years, people 10 years from now. It's just legally the problem, yeah. So, okay.
Not. I will not support a motion.
Chair, just to follow up some of Mr. Hayashi's comments, and I think it's we're not dealing with allowable homeless. I think we're dealing with illegal encampments and what rights do property owners have other than calling in the law enforcement. And if that's a long process and our council saying that the landowner is responsible, but if the responsible landowner has taken all the responsible action he or she can do, then where are we on enforcement? Now, this board here today would probably say you may not be liable because you've taken all the actions. And I think what Mr. Hayashi is referring to in the future that, and I can't speak to that because we don't know, but a future board or future staff may say, that's not the way I interpret it, the way it's written. So I'm going to go with the way it's written, and you're responsible regardless of what you've done. And I think that's a quandary that I'm not trying to put words in Mr. Hayashi's mind, but those are some of the quandaries I'm dealing with. And the other thing, I know the staff has done a lot of work on this. I know they've been working on it since 2006. Did a tremendous job on their presentation today. But I will say this, that the people that are here today asking for this additional time, some of them I've known for 30 to 35 years, and these are responsible people who are asking for additional time that they can talk to their colleagues and be able to have some kind of conclusion. And you know from my previous action, I'm the type of person that we're not going to satisfy everybody, but the more that we can get to thinking of what we have to do, and there's no question in my mind the TMDL is going to be passed one way or another sometime, whether it's today or 90 days or 6 months from now, because we're required to. That's our job up here. But how we get there, I think, is our responsibility. And I would rather have more of these people lined up with us. We're not going to have everybody agree with us, but more of them would probably understand what we're trying to do and attempting to do than we have it today. And as the climate of the political world as today, the normal thing is people are saying government is trying to jam things down our throat. And I think that my opinion, if this is going to be a motion to pass today, I will not support it because I feel that we should give these folks additional time to be able to get their information, and not that they haven't provided a lot of it, but I think that they have some legitimate additional information that would be beneficial to this board and to the state.
Briggs, is there just insufficient time to bring it back for July? That's just not 4 months from now, but.
Well, the.
That, I guess the comment period.
When is the July meeting?
July 8th.
July 8th, so it's early July. So the agenda goes out the door mid-June, which means we've got to have it going through for final review actually late May. And so March, April, May, we're already within that 90 days that you're talking about. Without any follow-up to a 90-day process period in terms of significant changes.
I guess it also depends on what happens in that 90 days, what you would expect of staff in that 90 days. Or are we just giving stakeholders another 90 days to finish up their document, or what?
That's something that I wanted to comment on as well, is that if the board gives additional time for staff to bring something back, for stakeholders to comment and staff to bring something back, I want to be very careful in what you are directing us to do, because the non-point source plan that was adopted in 2004 requires us to include five elements in the program that we bring to you. And so those five elements are going to be there. And what you heard today is that the numbers that we are proposed are unreasonable. And you also heard that It should be a voluntary education outreach program. We are not going to propose changes in the numbers or a voluntary education outreach program because that would not comply with the non-point source policy. So be careful in what you are giving a 90-day or 120-day extension for. If we give the impression to the stakeholders that we're going to change those things, we're going to build false hope, and people are going to come back even more angrier than they are today because we're not going to make those kind of changes. Okay. What is it that we are asking for? We have comments that were submitted. We have our response to comments. Now we're going to have comments on our response to comments, and then we're going to have staff's comments on those comments.
It sounded like the main reason for asking for more time is that they felt they didn't have time to read their combined comments and responses. That was the bulk of the extra pages that you're talking about. It's 87 pages. A lot of that are actually your comments because we put those in the document and responded. And a lot of our responses are redundant. They're the same thing because a lot of the comments were redundant. What I heard is that you need more time for reviewing that and what it translated into in terms of changes in the document. And then additionally, you're talking about more time for groups to meet to gain a better understanding of what it is that's in the document, which is really on you. You've invited us to attend a meeting, which is fine, but you're really talking about you communicating amongst your organizations and having more time to do that.
Michelle Cross.
What
do you mean, never mind?
I had something I wanted to add.
Go ahead.
And Mr. Hayashi, I realize where we're not communicating, and this may help you understand why I said what I said, is that if there were a violation of the prohibition from the homeless people and the enforcement staff brought an enforcement action against the homeowner, there are defenses to that action. And some of the defenses would fit the circumstances that you're talking about, one of which is there's an intentional act of a third party, the effects of which could not have been prevented or avoided by the exercise of due care or foresight. That would be one. So if they did all they could and they just couldn't prevent it, that's a 100% defense to the action. And another one is any other circumstance or event which causes the discharge despite the exercise of every reasonable precaution to prevent or mitigate the discharge. So if they acted reasonably to get the people removed or whatever, that would be another defense. Another one is, those two would fit the circumstance. There could be a grave natural disaster or something. I don't think that fits. Those two. So the reason that I'm saying what I said is that there already are in the law that if they do what's reasonable, they're not going to be held liable.
What law?
The water code. This is 13350 of the water code, which is the provision to enforce prohibitions.
That's what he needs to know, that there's already a statute
right, and
that
that's
provides
why I, yeah.
defenses.
Right. So the circumstances you're concerned about, I think, are directly addressed in the law that says if the owner acts reasonably to deal with the problem and it doesn't work, they're not going to be held liable.
Which means if staff even brought that in the first place, they'd be laughed at. So they wouldn't bring it if those were the circumstances.
Well, all right. So.
Just one more thing. I wanted to comment on the time, on that if you do want to allow more time, I would recommend that you not reopen the matter for new comments on the item that's proposed, that it would be simply be a matter of revising the response to comments and addressing those comments. But if in the process of reviewing and maybe making changes to response to comments, the staff does propose to make changes to the TMDL, that then it would have to be re-noticed. But if it's a process of having dialogue with interested parties and then clarifying response to comments, then it would not require reopening for new comments on the item.
I think we've got a lot of things coming together and some different perceptions of what's going on. And I think staff has done a very good job with their presentation, their analysis. I found all the material, which I did read through in about 4 days, all the pages, pretty clear. And I don't disagree with the language, you know, in the resolution and the prohibitions. However, you know, having said that, I think Mr. Jeffries does hit on an important point, and that is that we do need to rely upon the active, willing participation, you know, of members of the public to carry out programs of, you know, a nature like this. And I think it buys us some goodwill to go ahead and, you know, grant an extension for what probably would be more than the 90 days, because I don't see how we're going to hit July. So the question is, okay, looks like maybe December. Well, September's in San Luis Obispo, and I guess, you know, maybe because if we would be continuing this, that would work for September. I don't have a problem with that, but I think that, you know, the timing is one thing. The other part of this is, and I think Michael raised the issue, that we really need to be very clear to the public as to what is going to happen, because we're going to pass the TMDL. We're required to by law. It's going to have certain things in it that aren't going to change at all. I mean, we can't have, you know, human fecal matter getting into waterways. I mean, that's a no-brainer. The provisions of what look like the domestic animal livestock discharges, that's really what we're spending all of our time on here. And I would encourage, you know, the folks that are here and those that are really concerned about that component of this to really focus on the language which appears on page 13 of attachment 1 to the resolution. It's only a few paragraphs, and you could really help this process along by zeroing in on that. And I mean, you've alluded to the language being either insufficient or not detailed enough, more thorough, I think, Mr. Johnson, you said, in terms of implementation. That's where you should address your time and effort, so that and vet it with staff ahead of time, because it doesn't help us when it just comes back to us up here and we don't have enough time to really have staff review it. That's where the effort should be. And maybe, and to Mrs. Din, let me just add this, or Ms. Din, just because we get a lot of comments does not necessarily mean staff is going to change anything. And I don't mean that to say that comments may not be helpful or they might not be on target, but frequently staff's position is well thought out and there really isn't much room to move from what we need to do as an agency to move forward. Now, there were some changes made, not very many, but don't get the expectation that this, you know, an extension, which I think is going to happen, is going to necessarily end up in a wholesale revision of what's in front of you. So I think this is, you know, looks like it's time to have your group meet, kind of get on board with what's happening and to educate, you know your members, but to focus specifically on what's in front of you now that you know what it is, because it's in here. We'll revisit it then. I mean, so I'm in favor of an extension, too.
Mr.
Really,
Chairman.
For the purposes that Mr. Jeffries alluded to, not that I don't think this is insufficient, but I think more time would be helpful to the overall process that we're involved in. So, and I don't envision staff having to do a lot. I see this as a continuation of this agenda item. But, you know, the public comment would only be addressing new information that comes in?
And only written.
And only written? Well, are you saying
we would, I think public comment's closed, right?
Are okay, but we would still have some public comment on revisions or new information.
I don't think we want to.
Okay.
If You don't have to reopen the document for public comment if there are not substantial changes to it.
Okay.
So you could have allow for additional written comments and close the public hearing as far as additional oral comments.
So we come back in, let's say it's September or whenever, there'd be no oral comments?
You can do that, yes.
We can do that. Okay.
Add your hearing.
Okay.
Also, Mr. Chairman, regarding the timing, July is nearly 4 months from now, which actually exceeds their request for 90 days. As I pointed out, some of that time will be taken up by process, but in light of the reasons for the extension, maybe that is still reasonable and workable to have that in July. And then, you know, we're up here in Watsonville, which is more convenient.
Actually, my understanding, I don't think the gentleman's here, the original one who asked for the 90 days.
He's right here. He's here. Mr. Johnson.
Right there.
Where is he? Oh, yeah. It was my understanding that what you meant, that our decision should be postponed 90 days. Is that right?
Because of the working with the other organizations and the politics involved in that, our feeling or my feeling based on gut was that we would need 90 days to make sure that we vet the entire document.
What would happen at the end of 90 days? Oh, you would be done with your process.
When we're done, okay. And I'm giving you my word that I will be working on this, we will be working on this, and we will be in contact with staff.
I don't. If they're done in 90 days, then there's only like 30 days before the board meeting.
Less than 30 days.
Less than 30 days before the board meeting.
So it depends on what you expect from staff.
And it depends what they come up with.
Well, if.
Whether that requires something.
Well, I would suggest that if you want to postpone it, you not worry about the time and just leave it up to Mr. Briggs to figure out if it's going to work to bring it back, and if it doesn't. You don't really have to do
all right.
Sort out exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So do we need a motion for this, or are we just going to continue the matter?
You can just continue the item. But if you want to specify that you're closing the oral comment period, you can do that.
Oral and written, or just?
Need a motion for that?
No.
We don't. Okay. How does the board feel about closing public comment on what has already happened? Okay. All right. So public comment is closed as to what has already happened, and public comment will be as to only new information then that presented in the staff report that will be generated before this item is noticed again. Okay. All right. Is that at least 90 days, obviously. Okay. Anything else? This item, Mr. Hodgson?
Yeah, just wanted to comment that I think that when the cattlemen's associations get together, they should be thinking in terms of creating a 1-2-3 list of specific things that they would like to see changed, and then they should vet that with staff, because as staff's pointed out, there's some things that are not going to get changed. There's no point putting those on the list. So let's get down to things that we have the opportunity to modify that are important to you.
Well, they're going to need staff to do that. Mr. Jeffries was just sharing with me his thought that what might be helpful is to have.
Well, I think there'd be a lot of clarification, interpretation from the staff, from the public. And I think there may be some.
To the public.
And it may be some concerns of how the language is written and interpretation to the staff back to those individuals who would ask those questions. I think that would be very helpful.
Yeah, okay, you would think of may I clarify?
Pardon?
May I clarify what you just said?
Yeah.
For my own edification, I think that you think it would be helpful if we were to clarify some of the questions that they have that they posed today, such as implementation and how that will work, for example, so that then they can proceed in their 90 days to get comments back to us.
Well, I think then they can carry that interpretation to the people that they represent.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And the people who are here today could carry that message back, that this is the interpretation from this board and this staff, and they can take away some of the misconceptions of what we're trying to do.
Sure.
And I think that there are some people feel that we have the right as this board to change the law, which we don't. And so there's some things that they'll have to understand that there are rules and regulations and state laws that we can't change. We don't have the ability to do that.
Very good. Okay. And then so then they're going to have 90 days after we give them that information, or 90 days beginning today, and we're going to give them some information, and then they're going to have 90 days to...
Well, at least 90 days, and then when the staff is ready, that you think that you're ready to come back, then
right.
Then we need to agendize it again.
Okay, and Mr. Young, you said something about then a new staff report for that next meeting.
Well, you're going to... I just mean there's going to be something. Are you going to take the same staff report and just...
Right, what I would imagine is most likely you're going to have just a revised response to comments.
Okay.
But you may choose after you have communication with the interested parties that have been here today that you do want to make a change in the TMDL itself.
Okay.
In which case you would have to notice that.
Very good.
So unless it's a minor tweak or something.
I hate to belabor it. I just want to make sure about what our role is.
Yes.
Very good. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other board comments or questions? Okay. Thank you very much. All right. I think that concludes our meeting, doesn't it?
One more item on the EU.
We already did it.
One more part.
One more part. Okay.
That you requested.
Okay. All right.